Well, actually, the idea for the Progressives Primer, 100 Easy Ways to Make a Difference Now, came after too many late nights of answering emails from readers of my opinion pieces asking if I would write a book cutting through the haze of propaganda surrounding U.S. politics these days. And judging by the sheer volume of emails received, progressives are especially eager to get past the political posturing and the angry tirades filling today's bookshelves, and they crave a book that will clearly detail what is going on in the states today, which will be balanced, which will inform, entertain, and above all, empower, and which will also include some spotlights on everyday activists, people making a difference in their communities.
And now Heather Vokush reading from her latest work.
The Bush administration launched a war against women from day one, with reproductive rights a prime battlefield. Emergency contraception and abstinence-only education are just two examples of this. We all know that condoms sometimes break, and many of us have had the horrible realization that the accident happened right during our fertile days. So thank goodness for emergency contraception, EC, a high but safe dose of birth control hormones that can significantly reduce the risk of pregnancy, but only if taken within 72 hours after intercourse, and the sooner the better. Let's say that the condom breaks late on a Friday night. Ideally, a woman would head to the pharmacy early Saturday morning to get her EC started right away. But there's a catch. EC currently isn't available over the counter, so she would have to wait for a doctor's office hours the week after to even get a prescription. Too late. This situation is extra crazy when considering that the Food and Drug Administration's advisory committees on non-prescription drugs and on reproductive health drugs unanimously decided in late December 2003 that over-the-counter EC was in fact safe. Regardless, the FDA continued dragging its feet about making EC more easily available for women, and much of the problem was due to the FDA's then acting commissioner, Lester Crawford. But far from firing Crawford, Bush nominated him to take over the FDA permanently. While Democratic senators initially blocked Crawford's confirmation, they gave approval in June 2005 after he promised to make a decision on EC by September 1, 2005. However, upon being confirmed, Crawford yet again delayed the decision. Dr. Susan Wood, the well-respected head of the FDA Women's Health Office, resigned in protest, saying, quote, "I have spent the last 15 years working to ensure that science informs good health policy decisions. I can no longer serve as staff when scientific and clinical evidence, fully evaluated and recommended by the professional staff here, has been overruled." End quote. And that's when things got really bizarre. Weeks after Wood's resignation, the FDA Women's Health Office sent out a mass email announcing that she would be replaced by Dr. Norris Alderson, who was duly listed on the FDA site as Acting Director, Office of Women's Health, Associate Commissioner for Science. One small problem. Alderson is a veterinarian. That's right. The administration appointed an animal doctor to be in charge of women's health. It speaks volumes, doesn't it? After the predictable outcry, the FDA took a page from Orwell's playbook and tried to pretend that Alderson had never been appointed in the first place. Recipients of the initial mass emailing, of course, knew otherwise. To make things even weirder, Crawford himself suddenly resigned as head of the FDA in September 2005, just months after having been confirmed, amid allegations of not having properly disclosed his financial holdings to the Senate. Meanwhile, EC remains available only by prescription, and American women's reproductive rights remain hostage to partisan politics. While the Bush administration has fought against EC and other forms of birth control, it has aggressively pushed and funded so-called abstinence-only education programs, which eliminate any discussion about condoms, birth control, or other safe sex practices, instead teaching young people to remain virgins until marriage. But abstinence-only programs just don't work. By emphasizing the evils of vaginal sex, these programs have been shown to push youngsters into even riskier acts, such as anal or oral sex, and without protection. An 8-year study by Columbia's Institute for Social and Economic Research and Policy, for example, found that youngsters who had taken an abstinence pledge were 6 times more likely to have oral sex than those who remained abstinent without a pledge. And pledging boys were 4 times as likely to have tried anal sex than non-pledgers. In addition, pledgers also were less likely to use condoms during their first sexual encounter and less likely to be tested for sexually transmitted diseases. Apart from being ineffective, many abstinence-only courses teach blatant lies. A 2004 report for Representative Henry A. Waxman, Democrat, California, noted that 80% of the abstinence-only curricula used by grantees of the largest federal abstinence initiative contain false, misleading, or distorted information about reproductive health. For example, one curriculum says that, quote, "the popular claim that condoms help prevent the spread of STDs is not supported by the data," end quote. Other curricula claim that condoms are ineffective in preventing HIV transmission or pregnancy, and that the likelihood of premature birth and tubal pregnancies increases after abortion. Another curriculum states that between 5% and 10% of women who have legal abortions will become sterile. Many curricula were found to impose religious viewpoints onto scientific fact, and one curriculum even said that HIV can be spread through contact with sweat and tears. In short, your federal taxpayer dollars are being used to teach outright lies to young people across the country. Your taxes have also been promoting sexist gender roles. As Representative Waxman noted, several of the abstinence-only curricula studied in his report present stereotypes as scientific facts. Here's an example. Quote, "One book in the Choosing the Best series presents a story about a knight who saves a princess from a dragon. The next time the dragon arrives, the princess advises the knight to kill the dragon with a noose, and the following time with poison, both of which work, but leave the knight feeling ashamed. The knight eventually decides to marry a village maiden, but did so only after making sure she knew nothing about nooses or poison." The curriculum concludes by saying, "The moral of the story, occasional suggestions and assistance may be all right, but too much of it will lessen the man's confidence or even turn him away from his princess." End quote. Can you believe this? It's being taught in public schools, and you're paying for it. Here are some other quotes from federally funded abstinence-only program curricula, as listed in Waxman's report. "Women gauge their happiness and judge their success by their relationships. Men's happiness and success hinge on their accomplishments. Men tend to be more tuned into what is happening today and what needs to be done for a secure future. When women began to enter the workforce at an equal pace with men, companies noticed that women were not as concerned about preparing for retirement. This stems from the priority men and women place on past, present, and future." Or how about this one? Quote, "Just as a woman needs to feel a man's devotion to her, a man has a primary need to feel a woman's admiration. To admire a man is to regard him with wonder, delight, and approval." End quote. Young women today have a hard enough time trying to forge a healthy identity out of conflicting societal expectations, and they sure don't need this sexist nonsense masquerading as fact in their classrooms, too. The bottom line is that most parents don't support abstinence-only programs. A 2004 survey showed that a full 94% of Americans approve of teaching young people about birth control. Regardless, the Bush administration proposed a full $38 million increase for abstinence-only programs in fiscal year 2006, up to a total of $193 million for the year. And things look even worse for fiscal year 2007. The administration proposes slashing funding to the nation's family planning program, to Violence Against Women Act prevention and prosecution programs, to the Maternal and Child Health Block grant, to the Healthy Start Infant Mortality Initiative, and to myriad other programs benefiting women and their families. In contrast, the abstinence education budget will be increased by $89.5 million for a total of $204 million in fiscal year 2007, on top of the $10 million already allocated in fiscal year 2007 for a national abstinence education public awareness campaign. When it comes to women's rights and reproductive freedom, the Bush administration has some crazy and dangerous priorities.